It's 10 to 5 every Friday at this time, the previous 7 days in the US, in Simon Marks's American Week.
Eddie, if you had any doubts about the polarisation of American politics, they would have been permanently dispelled last night. Following the collapse of the planned second debate between President Trump and Joe Biden, after the president refused to participate in a virtual event, the two candidates showed up for two separate televised town halls at exactly the same time on two different TV networks. Could anything be more on brand for America in 2020 than voters being forced to decide which echo chamber to join? Trump live on NBC or Biden live on ABC? Unless, of course, you chose Big Brother over on CBS, which may have been the biggest winner of the night. From Donald Trump, there was endless sizzle on display and very little steak. The president essentially used the town hall meeting as an audition for season two of The Trump Show. At the beginning, going hammer and tong with NBC presenter Savannah Guthrie. She was a tigress toying with a naughty child. Here's their exchange on the still very open and unresolved question about when exactly Donald Trump first tested positive for COVID-19.
When was your last negative test? When did you last remember having a negative test?
Well, I test quite a bit, and I can tell you that before the debate, which I thought it was a very good debate, and I felt fantastically, I had no problem before.
Did you test the day afterwards. Of the debate?
I don't know. I don't even remember. I test all the time. But I can tell you this. After the debate, I think it was Thursday evening, maybe even late Thursday evening, I tested positive. That's when I first found out
about it. Well, back to the debate, because the debate commission's rules, it was the honor system, would be that you would come with a negative test. You say you don't know if you got a test on the day of the debate?
I had no problem. Again, the doctors do it. I don't ask them. I test all the time. And they,
did you take a test, though, on the day of the debate?
You know, if you ask the doctor, they'll give you a perfect answer.
Yeah, but, and you don't know if you took a test the day of the debate?
Possibly I did, possibly I didn't. But, you know, the doctor is very accurate information.
So just to be clear, the man who claims to possess the greatest memory in human history can't remember whether he was, in fact, tested before the debate, and says we should all go and ask his physician, a man who is himself a proven liar. Let's keep going. What about Donald Trump's debts and the still unresolved issue of his failure to pay income tax for at least 10 of the last 18 years?
I want to say two things. Number one, it's a very small amount of money. Number two, it's very straight. It's very, very straight.
The president there suggesting that $400 million that he owes to an array of unknown creditors, who might include Russians and Turks, we simply don't know, is a drop in the bucket, or as he described it elsewhere in the town hall, a peanut. But what about the taxes?
You could clear this up tonight by just releasing your tax returns yourself. I mean,
no person in their right mind would release prior to working out the deal with the IRS.
You it know, also says that you paid $750 in taxes in the year you were elected.
Yeah,
is that
that's
true
a
or
statutory
not?
Number. It's a statutory.
But
it's
is that true?
I think it's a filing number. You pay $750. It's a filing or a filing fee.
Most people here probably
pay
more.
No, I don't know. I can tell you this. If they have my tax returns, as you know, they have to go to jail. It's illegal. But their numbers were wrong.
Just on the facts, there's no reason to believe the numbers contained in the documents obtained by the New York Times are wrong, not least because there's no such thing as a $750 statutory filing payment when you send your tax return in. It doesn't exist. He completely made it up. And speaking of other things that are entirely made up, conspiracy theories and the president's relentless promulgation of them took up a chunk of time last night. First, he was asked about QAnon, a group once consigned to the darkest fringes of the internet, now, thanks to President Trump, even on the brink of winning a seat in Congress.
It is this theory that Democrats are a satanic pedophile ring and that you are the savior of that.
I know nothing about QAnon.
I just told you.
I know very little. You told me, but what you tell me doesn't necessarily make it fact. I hate to say that. I know nothing about it. I do know they are very much against pedophilia. They fight it very hard.
Now, just to pause him there for a moment, because this is personal for me. I live just up the road from Comet Pizza, a lovely restaurant, hugely popular with young families here, that was shot up by a madman with an assault rifle because he falsely believed Hillary Clinton was sexually abusing children in its basement. The restaurant doesn't even have a basement. Now, back to NBC's Savannah Guthrie.
Just this week, you retweeted to your 87 million followers a conspiracy theory that Joe Biden orchestrated to have SEAL Team 6, the Navy SEAL Team 6, killed to cover up the fake death of bin Laden. Now, why would you send a lie like that to your followers? You retweeted
it. That was a retweet. That was an opinion of somebody, and that was a retweet. I'll put it out there. People can decide for themselves.
I don't take a position. You're not like someone's crazy uncle who can just retweet whatever.
That was a retweet. If I didn't have social media, I don't call it Twitter, I call it social media, I wouldn't be able to get the word out.
Having established that perhaps the president is in fact like someone's crazy uncle, for me it was time to switch channels. And tuning into Joe Biden's town hall over on ABC was rather like suddenly switching the heavy metal channel off and picking the Open University instead. I got there just in time to hear moderator George Stephanopoulos try to get the Democratic candidate to answer a pretty basic question in this election. If he wins, does he plan to enlarge the Supreme Court by packing it with additional liberal justices to offset the imminent arrival on the bench of Judge Amy Coney Barrett, a conservative, whose confirmation hearings took place this week?
I have not been a fan of court packing because I think it just generates what will happen. Whoever wins, it just keeps moving in a way that is inconsistent with what is going to be manageable.
So you're still not a fan?
Well, I'm not a fan. I then say it depends on how this turns out. Not how he wins, but how it's handled.
What does that mean, how it's handled? How will that determine
For example, there's actually real wide debate on the floor if people are really going to be able to have a time to go through this. You know, I don't know anybody who's gone on
he burbled his answers to a host of questions littered with references to the inner workings of Congress, where he spent so much of his 47-year career. The undoubted loser of the night was a young black voter in the audience selected to ask a question.
A question now from Cedric Humphrey. He's a student from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, progressive Democrat.
Don't jump, Cedric. You look like you're way up there.
I'll be okay.
Cedric was indeed up in the socially distanced gods, telling the former vice president he'd be okay and wouldn't jump, although that was before he had to endure the answer to his very perceptive question.
What do you have to say to young black voters who see voting for you as further participation in a system that continually fails to protect them?
Well, I say, first of all, as my buddy John Lewis said, it's a sacred opportunity to right to vote. You can make a difference. And the next question is, am I worthy of your vote? Can I earn your vote? And the answer is, in addition to dealing with a criminal justice system to make it fair and make it more decent, we have to be able to put black Americans in a position to be able to gain wealth.
Having glancingly encouraged black voters to turn out and back him, Joe Biden then talked for the next 8 minutes. A civics lesson rich in detail about his career in Congress, passing legislation to support small business, although at points he tripped over some of his own numbers and the details. Cedric's eyes started glazing over. Perhaps the air was a little too thin up there for him. And when it was over...
got me involved in politics in the first place, thing called redlining. We can change so much that we can do so much to change the circumstances to give people a real opportunity.
Cedric, did you hear what you needed?
I'm sorry.
I was just saying, do you hear what you needed to hear?
I think so.
Okay.
Well, there's a lot more if you're going to hang around afterwards, I'll tell you more.
Okay.
I don't know about you, but it sounded to me like Cedric was just being polite. For more than 15 million people who have already voted, the town halls and everything else that took place this week were irrelevant. And by the time we get to the final presidential debate between Donald Trump and his rival next Thursday, even more Americans will have done their civic duty. We don't know what's fueling the record early voter turnout that we're witnessing. Are people worried about catching COVID-19 on election day itself? Are they determined to end America's national nightmare, or determined to put Donald Trump back in the Oval Office for 4 more years? One former presidential aspirant, Democrat Pete Buttigieg, urged voters on Twitter last night to imagine turning on the TV, seeing your president, and feeling your blood pressure go down instead of up. Sounds attractive, but then you remember, Eddie, the wild popularity of horror movies here. And you wonder if the audience is really ready to turn Donald Trump off.
Simon Marks's American Week, back on this programme next Friday at 10 to 5. This is LBC. I'm Eddie Mayer.